Okay, Rabbi Yisai, today's daf is daf Samach, the final daf in Perek HaZohav, and we're going to be starting Perek Ezehu Neshech in Mirat Hashem. Look at the Mishnah, Nun Tes Amid Beis, the final line on the Amid. Look at the Mishnah, in Ma'arvin Peirois, Bepeirois, Afil Chadoshim, Mechadoshim. Don't mix in one type of Peirois, not one type, one group of peiros with another group of peiros, even though they happen to both be new. Now, first of all, we have to understand that we use the term peiros over here. Peiros, of course, is normally defined as fruit, but as we'll see on the top of the Amud, what it really means is tvur, really means is grain. And what does it say? Don't mix in one group with another group, which means, when I say group, we're talking about the mushel, the same wheat, but the person has multiple fields, or in one field he has multiple growings of grain, all wheat. He is selling them to the lekeach. The lekeach assumes that it's all the same tvua from the same part of the field, or from the same field. And it turns out that he's actually mixing in the tvua from other fields, even if they are of the same quantity and quality. But nevertheless, since he made up, I'm talking about the tvua of field number one, don't mix in from field number two. Rashi doesn't explain what the problem would be. In fact, the Rosh says that the only problem is, the only issur is, if you are mixing in inferior tvua with regular or superior tvua. The person is under the impression he's getting only from the superior brand, and in fact the seller is mixing in some of the inferior brand. That's prohibited. But Rashi doesn't talk about superior and inferior, and it sounds like if I said I'm selling you the tvua from the field on the right, don't mix in from the tvua on the left, unless you advise them in advance, or you advise them at the time of sale, by the way, I mixed in some from the other, and if the other person says, that's fine, that's okay, then it's okay. But otherwise, don't falsely sell a different, I don't want to say different brand, but a different group of wheat which was not part of the original terms. Because, don't mix and match. And the Mishnah continues on at the top of the Omid Vein Terach Loimer, and the Chavada Chadoshe B'Yishonim, that if you made up to go and sell him old wheat, don't sell him new wheat, or don't mix in new wheat with old wheat. And you're thinking to yourself, wouldn't the person want new wheat preferably over old wheat? And Rashi says no. Anybody that happens to be in the wheat business knows that when you take the wheat and you eventually grind it up into flour, it's much easier, and apparently you get more flour if you take old grain. Old grain is more easily susceptible to crushing and grinding, as opposed to new grain, which is still moist and which is much tougher and harder to go and crush into flour. Look at the top, Rashi. Ein tzorach lo mechadosh b'yishonim. Pasuk limkor lo yishonim. The deal was, I'm selling you old wheat. Lo ya'orim behen chadoshim. Don't mix in any new wheat. Shai yishonim yiveishim. The old wheat is nice and dry. For oisim kemach yoisim in a chadoshim, and therefore produces more kemach, more flour than the new wheat. So you made up the mushel to go and sell 50 bushels of old wheat to Yankel. Don't mix in the 50, 5 or 10 bushels of fresh new wheat, because Yankel is not going to be happy with that. For purposes of making flour, new wheat is inferior to old wheat. So don't mix in Chadosh V'Yishan. But Rashi, in the next Rashi, points out, but of course the other way around is permissible, that if you made up to go and sell him new wheat, and you know that the person wants the wheat to make into flour, then you're allowed to go and throw in some old wheat because that's preferable. If anything, he'll say, hey, that's so nice. The Moicha gave me a freebie. He threw in some old wheat, which is exactly what I needed for purposes of making it into flour and baking it into matzahs or what have you. And then the Mishnah continues, Be'emes Amru. Interesting expression, Be'emes Amru. The Gemara is going to say Be'emes Amru. Wherever you see Be'emes Amru means that's the halacha. So what is the halacha, says the Mishnah? Be'yayin heitiru li'arev koshe berach. When it comes to wine, the Chacham will matter to go and mix in some stronger wine with some weaker wine, some softer wine, because mashbichai, it only makes it better, makes it better for drinking, I guess, both in quality and the depth and the strength of the wine, it's better. Is somebody ringing the bell? Noemi, somebody rang the bell in the back? Anyway, getting back to our Gemara. Because it makes the wine better. So Rashi explains once again over here that we're only talking about mixing in good wine with bad wine, so to speak. Kosher, strong wine is considered to be preferable to soft wine. Noemi?
Yeah?
I think somebody rang the bell in the back. Could you check?
Okay,
and leave the door open in case Chesky wants to come in.
Okay.
Thank you. Sorry for interruption, everyone. Back to our Mishnah. So the Mishnah says you're allowed to go mixing strong wine with weaker wine because that makes it stronger. And once again, Rashi says that's tafka because you agreed to go and sell soft or weaker wine, so then you can sell him mix. Okay, thank you. Okay, please close the door, thank you. So you have the right to go and mix in stronger wine because that's preferable. And if it goes the other way around too, that if you in fact made up to go and sell him strong wine, you're not allowed to go and mix in the weak wine, because the weak wine is considered to be inferior. So the two halachas are really one and the same. And that is, when you're selling tefuah, and you made up to go and sell the preferable, the superior tefuah, in the form of the old tefuah, because that's easier to use to manufacture or process flour, then you're not allowed to put in the inferior. However, if you're selling inferior grain in the form of brand new grain, you're allowed to go and throw in some old, because that's preferable. And the same thing, Gabi Yayin, you're allowed to go and mix in some stronger wine with some weaker wine, but don't mix in weaker wine with the stronger wine. So it's basically the same halacha. Do you understand the reason why the Gemara is saying that you're not allowed to mix in the inferior with the superior? Number one. And number two, it's really not going in terms of schus and choiva. The terms that you're using about chavon l'odom and zoch l'odom is talking about a, if you will, a boy scout, a good to eat that wants to help out somebody else. So you're allowed to be zoich on behalf of somebody else without even asking him, but certainly don't do anything that would machayev him without asking him. Our Mishnah is talking about hilchos einoah. What is considered to be false advertising or practices which are prohibited because they involve a certain degree of fooling the other person, cheating the other person. So, okay, so the beginning of our parak, we were talking about price fraud, that you overcharge, or in the case of the moicher, that you underpay. Here we're not talking about in terms of price, we're talking about the quality of the commodity that you're selling. If you made up that the commodity was going to be X, you can go and throw in freebies if you want and throw in Ys, if those are preferable and more superior to what you made up. If however you made up to go and sell something which is a superior product, don't go and throw in things which are inferior, because that's not what you made up. You were therefore defrauding the other person, not in price, but you're defrauding in the quality of the goods that you're selling. But we're going to see Mechim when we get to the Gemara. Like in all cases, all rules have exceptions, and this case is no exception. We have exceptions to this rule as well. We're going to talk about what happens if a person, in fact, prefers having nutrua because he himself wants to process it and make it dry and old. He feels that that way it will be under his own personal supervision. It's almost similar to when it comes to Pesach, and you're making shmura matzis. So the shmura has to be mishas katsira from the time of the harvest. From that time until you actually get to the shmura matzah bakery and they bake the matzis, it has to go through several processes. And each process, you have to have a person who's a shomer. So he's saying, I don't want to buy old flour. I want dafka new flour, or I shouldn't say flour. I want new wheat kernels, because I'm going to watch it every step of the way. I'm going to make sure that it gets old and it gets dry properly, and not that the chas v'shalom will any water get to it. It shouldn't get moist, and so on and so forth. Anyway, we'll see more in the Gemara, and when we get there. The Gemara of the Mishnah, however, is a little bit perplexing the way Rashi is learning, because then the case of the Yayin and the case of the Tvor, these two cases already are perfect parallels. They're examples of the same thing. Don't mix in inferior with superior, but you're allowed to mix in superior with inferior. And that being the case, why does the Mishnah have to switch from Peiros, from Tvor to Yayin? We could have simply started off the Mishnah, don't mix in Chadoshim be Yishonim, because Chadoshim is considered to be inferior. But Avadi, you're allowed to go and mix in the better with the inferior. So we don't have to switch from Tvua to talk about Yayin. We could have said the Emes Amr Be'etiru La'arev Yishonim Be'chadoshim, and stay with the parasha of Tvua. So therefore you'll notice on the side that Goyis Hagra, the Vilna Goyin, says that that's Taka the Girsa of Rashi in our Mishnah. But the Ritz had a Fakerta Girsa. He had a reverse Girsa, where there would be a Chiddush that Yayin would be different than Tvua. You'll see that Goyis Hagra and Ois Aleph, and you have to look up the Gra and the Ritz in the back that has a different Girsa in the Mishnah. But we'll see Mechim the Gemara that when you're mixing wines, this only works Bishas Hagitois. Bishas Hagitois means when the wine is still fermenting in the wine press. Once the wines have already been totally fermented, it's not necessarily a good thing to mix strong wine with weaker wine, softer wine. So for instance, if you're making Kiddush on Shabbos, and somebody puts down two bottles on the table, one is a Sauvignon, and the other is Yichvais Merlot, and you figure out, this is considered to be a better wine than this one, let's mix the two together. I'm not sure that that would be a mala, it might be a grace of chasar, because I'm not such a great wine connoisseur, but those that are, when you mix wines together, they immediately say, you're not improving it, you're rather getting an inferior product through the mixture. We'll see more Mechim Nigmar. Right to the Mishnah. You're not allowed to mix in wine sediment with wine. But you're allowed to go and put the shemarim inside. And the choyah, this is contradictory. We're saying, don't mix it, but you're allowed to put one in the other. The Gemara will ask that kasha shortly. Stay tuned for the Gemara. Mishnah is out of mind. Amish is telling us that in the good old days when they sold wine, they didn't sell diluted wine, but they sold strong, strong wine, which was totally undiluted. In fact, Imam Masechta's Bracha says that if you have undiluted wine, not a drop of water added, you cannot even make a Boyer Pri Gofen, and you cannot use it for Kiddush, because it's basically not Ro'oi Lishtois. It's something similar some of you may have for this Pesach, and if not, you might remember in your youth when you would get Kedem raspberry syrup. and you would mix it with water, and that would be your drink. So what, nobody drinks syrup directly straight from the bottle into the cup, just drink syrup. Wouldn't say it's impossible to drink, but it really doesn't have any real top. But you mix it with water, it gives it a nice top. So here too, in the good old days, they only sold strong wine, and you had to go and mix it with water to be able to go and make it drinkable. In fact, in many, many homes, there's a minig, whenever they open up a brand new bottle of wine, to add a drop of water to it. Where does that minig come from? So my father's Zechanu Bracha told me that the minig is because, since the Gemara Bracha says that if you want to make a Boir Higavim, you have to add water, even though all of our wine has already been diluted by the wine processor, but nevertheless, minig avisayni biyadayni, that you go and you continue on the Masoya, the minig, that you add a drop of wine. Afterwards, I found in later years in the Sefer Tami Hamin Hugim, he brings that Tam, and he brings a second Tam as well, more of a Kabbalistic nature, that the reason why you add the water is because wine is misamel, it symbolizes the midas hagvura. Most wine is strong, particularly if you have a high alcohol content. So it's strong wine. Therefore you add water to it, which symbolizes the midas hachesed. And therefore you try to vanquish and conquer the midas hagvura by pouring in a little bit of the midas hachesed, so the chesed dilutes the gvura. Another time that's given is, just in case any wine has become pogum. Pogum means that if somebody drank from the wine, even if a tzaddik, a kodesh, drank from the wine, then the wine becomes pogum, and you cannot use it after that for kiddush, or for havdalah, or for kosher bracha. However, there's a very simple fix. You just add a drop of water or a drop of wine, that takes away the pogum, and you can use it without a problem. So that's why many people add a drop of water to the wine. That would not be so shayach with a bottle of wine, but after you open the bottle, sometimes somebody might pour some wine back or whatever, so you always add a drop of water to it, you take away any potential pagam. Anyway, continuing on the Mishnah, so in the good old days they didn't sell diluted wine. What happens if some water fell into the wine? Mishnah is Arav Ma'ayim B'Yenoi. The Gemara is going to tell us a case with Rava. Then the person who has mixed or diluted wine should not sell it in a store to people that buy it. Rashi says, pruta or ma'at ma'at. People that buy small quantities. In the good old days, they didn't have bottles of wine like we have today that are for sale. But rather, the wine seller had a huge barrel that had in it, lamusho, 50 gallons. And people that would want to go and buy wine, they would bring their own containers, their own bottles, and the seller or the koiner would go and pour from the large barrel into the smaller containers. So now, if this individual's wine in the barrel, some water had gotten mixed in it, so the wine has now been diluted, since the minig is only to go and sell undiluted wine, if you're going to give him diluted wine, then you're giving him an inferior product. So you're not allowed to do that. You can't sell it bechanut to small customers. Elam can idea unless he put up a big sign, or he tells every customer, I want you to know that this wine is not 100% unadulterated wine. It's 5% water, 10% water mixed in. He has to go and advise them. And don't go and sell it to a merchant, even if you do tell the merchant. Because the tagger might not tell his customers. So if you yourself are the storekeeper, and your wine got some water mixed in for whatever reason, it's easy for you, the storekeeper, not to be, or even the Israel, not to tell everybody to put up a big sign. But if you are going to go and sell it to a tagger, who in turn is going to sell it to customers, he has no interest in advising them that this wine is already diluted, and therefore he's going to give everybody a 5% break in the price. He might not say a word, and therefore you're going to be over on lifnei iver, so you're not going to sell it to a tagger, even if you're maidia. Now, the Mishnah continues on. That was the standard practice not to sell diluted wine. But there were places where, in fact, they sold diluted wine. Then yeah, that's okay, as long as people know that that's the minikah mokoy. So then there's no deception over here, no fraud by selling diluted wine, because that's the minik. A tagar, again, this is a person that buys large quantities and sells it to customers. He can go and buy tvua from five different granaries and put them all together in one silo and sell it in the store to whoever he wants to sell it to the customers. And he can go buy five different wines from five different wine presses, put them into pitamechot. Pitamechot over here means one large barrel. No problem. Why? Because people know that a tagar, by definition, the storekeeper, he doesn't just go and get the grain from one source, he gets it from multiple sources. He gets the wine from multiple sources. So no problem in mixing it. But be careful not to go and mix it. That sounds contradictory. We just said you're allowed to mix it, but make sure don't be miskaven la'arv. So Rashi is really bothered by that. And Rashi says is, let's look at the last Rashi here in the Mishnah. Almost halfway down the Amud, Shleiskaven la'arev, ulahoitzi kol. He shouldn't go and be moitzi kol. Liknois haroi v'mokim mishubach, la'arev boi v'mokim acher. In other words, he's going to go and put up signs and advertising the papers saying he's going to get the wine from Yichvais, from California Wine Valley, where the wine is supposed to be really, really special. And in fact, Roiviv's wine will be from there. But he's going to be Ma'arivit Mimokamacher from some winery, Yichvais, in Nevada, which is not as good as the wine in California. And therefore, Svurin Shekola Pesach, everybody assumes that since the Roiv is from the California wineries, probably all of it comes from the California wineries. So that you're not allowed to do. That's really deceptive practices. If you don't say where the wine comes from, or you don't say where the grain comes from, then everybody assumes it comes from multiple sources. But if you tell everybody that the wine or the grain comes from one major source, they assume that all of it comes from the same source or from the same region. That you're not allowed to do, because that would be deception. Okay, Zukimar, Tanur Ban. We go back to the first case in the Mishnah. Don't mix in brand new tvor with old dried out tvor. Says the Gemara, says the Braisa, it's a double poshet that if in terms of the price that the chadoshes are for a seller, in modern day terms, a quarter per saw. Certainly now that I mix those with yeshonos, which are sholish, which are three for a seller, which means that each saw is worth 33 cents. 33 cents obviously is more expensive than 25 cents. So if you're selling the yeshonos, which have a higher price, don't put in the chadoshet, which are a cheaper price, because that's price fraud. That's a double poshet. Even if it happens to be that the chadoshes are more expensive than the yeshonos, and you're wondering why would that be? Doesn't everybody want to have the yoshin? Because Rashi says that the tvua is already dried out, and they make more kemach from the yoshin than from the chadosh. Says Rashi, you're talking about a place or by customers that they themselves want to go and process their very own grain, and they're not interested in old grain which is dried out. They want to get it fresh from the farm, nice and moist, and they are going to go process it and make it dry and make it kishmak. And so therefore, for those customers, the chadoshes are more precious, and they're willing to pay an extra dollar. Chadoshes misholish. Ela afil chadoshes misholish mi'arba, and this individual, so you would think, by throwing in chadoshes into yeshonos, you're putting superior product into inferior, because after all, the chadoshes are more expensive, and you're throwing it into the cheaper tvur. We should thank this person for throwing in the more expensive product. No, don't do that. It could be that this particular individual doesn't want to go and get the chadoshes. He wants the Yishonis. He's like the Taprashi. He likes the Yishonis because he'll be able to go and bake it into flour, 1, 2, 3, because it's already Yosh. So even though the general local populace might prefer the new rather than the old, because they want to process it themselves, but maybe this individual wants Dafka the Yishonis, because he's like the universal populace that Dafka want to have the old, because he can quickly make more flour. So therefore, even though you think you're doing him a toive by throwing in chadoshes, you're not doing him a toive, so don't engage in that practice either. Which reminds me, since we're still in the Chag of Pesach, many of our wives go and use potato starch to go and make from it various cakes and cookies and what have you. And what is potato starch made out of? Potatoes. So many, many people buy potato starch in the supermarkets and the groceries. Our local Rebbe over here, the Kostner Rebbe, the Foshei Rebbe, Rabbi Rattenberg, the Zangizim, his Rebbetzin is so strict, they don't buy potato starch, but already a month or two before Pesach, she buys huge quantities of potatoes, like 100 pounds or perhaps even more. She goes and cuts them into pieces, grinds them, lets them dry out for a week or so, and then after that, when they settle, the water comes to the top, and the potato starch goes to the bottom, and then she pours off the water, and she uses that potato starch to go and produce all of her cookies and cakes, whatever, the cover Pesach. So you see, even though most people just buy the potato starch, there are people that want to actually process and make the potato starch. So here too, you have people that want to process the moist wheat. I'll take care of it. I'll dry it out. Don't do me any favors. Don't sell me the old grain and the dry grain. I want the moist grain. Okay, back to our Gemara. The Emes Amru Ben Shit Biayin Hitiru La'arev Kosher Barachon Nishu Majbichoy. Put in the superior wine into the inferior, because that makes it better. Amru Beluzer Ado Amra. The word Ado Amra, says Rashi, means like the Zoy Semeris. We see from our Mishnah, when it says the term Be'emes Amru, Ko Be'emes Amru Halochi. Dos is the halacha. In other words, normally our Mishnayos do not tell us halacha l'maisa. Our Mishnayos just tell us the opinions of various Tanoim, and then the Gemara explores the Paskan like this Tana, that Tana. When you see Be'emes Amru, dos mein dos is the halacha. In the Yerushalmi it says, when you say Be'emes Amru, it doesn't mean just that this is halacha, it means halacha l'moishim misinai. However, Rashi doesn't say that here. Rashi just says, Be'emes Amru means that's halacha l'maisa. But other Mefarshim bring, Yerushalmi says, Halach Alamosh Misina. Anyway, continuing on, Omer of Nachman, Bein Hagitoshon. That that we say in the Mishnah, if you add the strong wine to the soft wine, that that's Mashvichoy, it's Dafke when it's still fermenting in the wine press. So it's still in the middle of fermenting. You can always add the better, stronger wine to the weaker, softer wine. However, after the gitrei is already closed up, after the fermentation is over, don't mix wines together, because that is not going to help the wine. For in the today, to come arvishlein bena gitrois, we in the marketplace, we're not so makbid, we do mix and match wines even after the press is finished. People know, I mean, that's like the Mishnah said, that mokim shenogul hatol mayim yatilu. Everybody knows that that's the practice, so there's no fraud, no deception. This is a well-known practice. Rav Acha bar Rav Ika Omar, Hamani Rav Achahi. This is like the famous Rav Acha that we learned in the Brayta, the son of Rav Acha, Matir b'dover hanitam. Remember this Rav Acha, because we're going to have Rav Acha again on the Omid base. What Rav Acha says is, don't think that consumers are such fools. Consumers, in the type of product where they're able to go and taste it, they know what they're buying. So B'dover HaNitam explains Rashi is that when you wanted to go and buy wine in the good old days, remember, again, we're not buying bottles of wine, we're buying wine from the barrel, they would often allow the customer to go and taste a little bit of the wine. Ooh, this wine is geschmack, this is gewaldig. So therefore, if the wines were mixed, since you gave him an opportunity to taste it, don't tell me afterwards he shouldn't have mixed it. He knows what he bought. He tasted it. So then, Novad it's mutter, even if the minigam mokum was not necessarily to go and mix and match, whatever. If you're giving people an opportunity to taste it, so they'll figure out on their own. If they like it, they'll buy it. If they don't like it, they'll go down the street, or they'll take from a different barrel of wine. So you don't have to worry. On the surface, you have a stira. You say, you're allowed to go and put in the shemarim. Make up your mind. Are you allowed to put the shemarim, the sediment, in the wine, or are you not allowed to? Maybe you're going to go and tell me, what does it mean? To come more either way. Oh, I know what it means. You're not allowed to mix the two together. But if you're my dear, if you tell him, Rav Yid, I want you to know I'm mixing in, that's okay. Says him over there, that cannot be the pshat. How many can be safe? But right after that, the Mishnah continues that if you mixed in some water into the wine, this is the first time that the Mishnah uses this expression about my dear. Why didn't he use that expression before? Is the charai that the Reish is talking about in the case, even if he didn't say a word to him, same halach applies. Is the bazoi? Is the chastir Reish in the sefer? Here it says Eim Arvin, and it says Avon Lishmoy Shmorav. Am Rav Yehuda Alkik Amar Eim Arvin Shmorim Shol Emesh B'Shol Yoyim V'Leishol Yoyim B'Shol Emesh. You're not allowed to mix in shmorim of one wine with another wine. The Gemara uses the expression wine from yesterday with wine of today. That makes it clear we're talking about two different wines. So don't take the shmarim from one and insert it into the other. But Rashi says, Emesh and Yoim is laftaf. He's just giving an example. What he's telling us is, if you have two separate barrels of wine, even if they happen to be the same type, the same brand, both of them are Sauvignon, both of them are Merlot or Concord, what makes the difference? Don't take the sediment of one and put it together. But in the same wine, you're allowed to mix in the shmarim. So Rashi explains, the Gemara is going to use the expression in another line, shoyfe. When a person doesn't want the sediment in the wine, he pours very, very slowly so that the sediment remains on the bottom of the barrel, and he only pours off the top. What happens after he's already sold half of it, and he has shmarim on the bottom, and he has the remaining wine? He may want to, he doesn't want to suffer the loss of the shmarim on the bottom. So then, noisel shmarim, he's allowed to go and mix the shmarim of that same wine, one with the other. So you're now going to mix from yesterday to today or today to yesterday, and you're now going to mix even two separate barrels of wine, but in the same barrel, he's allowed to go and mix in the shmarim, the sediment, with the wine, because it's the same. Tana miyachi, Rabbi Yehuda Oimar, shoyfe yayin lechaveda, which shoyfe means to pour slowly and gently, so that the shmarim don't rise to the top. You're selling pure, refined, clear wine, crystal clear. Don't mix in shmarim from another barrel. But the same day, meaning the same barrel, is not a problem. Obviously, it's talking about a situation where he didn't advertise and selling pristine, crystal clear wine without shmarim, then you wouldn't be able to. But if he's just selling wine stam, you're allowed to mix in the shmarim from the same barrel. If water got mixed in, don't sell it in the chanut unless you're moidia, unless you tell me. So Gemara tells us a story. Rava Aisalei Chamra Mechanuta. Rava brought home a barrel of wine or some bottles of wine, Mechanuta, from the store, and Mazge, and he mixed it in with, he diluted it with water, and then Tame, and then he was Toyim, he tasted it. And we have a basam, and he realized this wine is not kishmak. Basam literally means that it's not sweet, but lav dafka sweet really means to say it is failing, or at least he considered it to be inferior quality wine. So what did he do? Shadre lechanut, he sent it back to the chanut, to the store. And he said to the storekeeper, it was a mekach tois, I thought that this wine was, you know, kishmak wine, it's shvacha wine, I'm giving it back to you. Omli Abai, Sabai was critical of Rav, and he says, what you're doing is by selling, by giving back the wine to the storekeeper, he's going to go and sell it to customers, and those customers are not going to know that this is mixed in with water. It's, obviously the storekeeper doesn't want to tell people because of the fact that then they'll say, well, we want to get a discount, it's diluted wine. So he didn't see, he might not say a word. So says Abaye to Rava, I'm concerned that if you are going to sell it back or give it back to the storekeeper, he's going to go and sell it to people without being my dear. And if he's not going to be moedet, even though you're telling him, don't sell it unless you tell people, but the tagar may not listen to you, and he may go and sell it to all of his customers without saying a word. And therefore you're going to be oivis, as Rashi, on the thneiva leisita mirsha. On the laser, Rabbi said to Abai, it's not a problem. Mazgadi made the idea. I go and dilute my wine differently than all other parties. I mean, Mara brings elsewhere that most other people, when they diluted their wine, they diluted it a 2-to-1 ratio, 2-to-1 more water than wine, and Rava used to do it a 3-to-1 ratio. So people know when they taste the wine, oh, this is a dilution done by Rava, and everybody would schmeck immediately, this is Rava's wine. Maybe they would pay more, it's Shirayim for Rava. But anyway, the point is, there is not going to be any fraud or deception. As soon as they taste it, they'll know this is not the regular wine, this is Rava's diluted wine. Maybe the toffee, maybe the storekeeper realizes that people will taste it and they'll know that this is diluted with water because of the heavy dilution that Rava put in. And what they're going to do is the storekeeper will add some more wine to the mix to be able to dilute the dilution of the wine. In other words, to strengthen the wine so that people will be fooled to think, oh, this is undiluted wine, because he's going to add so much more wine to cancel out, to neutralize the dilution of the water. Says he, that you don't have to worry about. In Kalin and Dovasov, if that's the case, then you have to worry about any potential theory. Rashi says, for instance, what happens if you happen to be a water merchant? See, you have a riot from here that they used to go and sell bottles of Polish spring water or Mayim Chaim water or whatever in the good old days too. And they would sell water. So then how are you allowed to go and sell water to someone who has a grocery store that is selling also wine? You know what he might do with some of the water? The water that he buys from you, he's going to pour into the wine. So ain't the double side, then you have to worry about everything. You can't go and even sell water. That's certainly not the case. So the Chum didn't make any gzeiros beyond that. If you can tell him the wine and you notice immediately that this is diluted wine, you don't have to worry about the storekeeper is going to add some more wine to take away the effect of the dilution. Finally, it says the Mishnah Mokash and Ragla Hapa Mayim Beyayin Yatilu. If the minig was to go and sell diluted wine, no problem. Says the Gemara, says the Brayis, the Tana L'Machzor L'Shlish V'Ravia. Even if you're talking about half, a third, or a quarter. So Rashi says that this price is telling us Hakol Kaminig Hamadina. Some places where the wine was very strong, they diluted it 50-50 with water. Some places a third and two-thirds, and some places a quarter and three-quarters. Whatever the minig amokim is, that's fine. But don't change the minig. If everybody does 50-50, don't do it one-third, two-thirds, or whatever, to deceive people by putting in more water. Amarav, like we said before, ben agita shanu, when does it make sense to add the water? When it's still fermenting in the wine press, because that's the time that you can add water without machankalia. Machankalia means to spoil it. But after the gitois, then in many places they wouldn't allow you to go and add the water. You can add the water yourself. But if the storekeeper is going to add the water, it can only spoil the strength of the wine and the longevity of the wine. The wine might not be able to last for more than a few days if you've diluted it. Okay, on to the next Mishnah. Zok the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Oimer v'yichalek en chanveni kloyes ve'goizlan tenoik v'neishu hu margilon lo v'yetzlai. But our Mishnah is now talking about deceptive advertising practices. In other words, until now we spoke about deception by overcharge in price. Our previous Mishnah spoke about deception in superior product versus inferior product. And here we're talking about you want to go and attract youngsters to come to your grocery store as opposed to the grocery store across the street. So any youngster that comes in below the age of 5, 6, 8, whatever the age is, you're going to go and give him free kloyes van goizim. Kloyes, of course, are wheat kernels. The goizim are nuts. Don't do that. Why? Because that's going to go and draw in these children, that anytime their mother sends them to the store, please pick up a bottle of wine, please pick up a dozen eggs, they're always going to go to this storekeeper because they're going to get the free nash. They're going to go and get the koizve. But chomatim and chomze, it's not a problem. You're allowed to do that. We'll see what the svara is of the chachamim in the gemara. If the shahr, the normal rate for selling wine, for instance, is $10 a bottle, don't go and sell at $9, because now you're undercutting all of your competitors. Everybody would try to undercut by cutting the price, because then everybody's going to go and get, Baruch Hashem, and it will be better for the consumers that they're paying less instead of paying more. Layover es ha-grisin. Grisin, Rashi says, is a form of kidneys, I believe. Was it Rashi? Layover es ha-psoilis. Pulin. Pulin are usually beans. I don't know if we're allowed to talk about pulin. Maybe there's some from the Achenu b'nei Edoi Samizrach that eat kidneys on Pesach. We typically do not. But anyway, so it says if you have these types of pulin, types of beans, the beans that we buy in the store have already been nicely cleaned. However, if you take the pulin from the ground, they have a shell around them, and you have to peel it. So if you happen to be the moicher, don't go and peel away the peel or the shell. Why not? Says Rashi, because you're going to overcharge people. What does that mean? If you look at Rashi, lo yover es apsoilis, that's four lines from the bottom onto three lines. By removing the peel or removing the shell, they really look so pretty now. Mal al demeim harbe, and you're going to go and charge much, much more. So the amount of a regular bean which has around it the peel, ich weiß 100 beans for a dollar with the peel. Now you take the peels off. Obviously these 100 now weigh much less. The problem is you might charge $1.50 or more for the same. And the person says, hey, I wanted 100 beans. When I had the shells, I got it for a dollar. You took off the shells. They look so pretty and so nice. That's considered to be, if you will, a deceptive practice, because what people are going to be doing is paying more than its weight, and therefore that's not fair. However, we'll see in the Mishnah, Divrei Rabbi Shaul, B'chom Matir, B'chom say that's fine, it is no problem. And Rashi says that the Gemara is going to tell us in the Amud Beis is because there are a lot of people that are willing to pay more for not having to have the tircha. It's true, I'm overpaying by the fact that the storekeeper has removed the shells and the peels, and I'm paying more than I should. However, some people just don't want to be bothered with having to peel it and to go and take off the shells, so therefore they're willing to pay more. It's not that much different than how do all of the takeout stores exist today. You can go and buy a raw chicken with mushroom for $4.99 a pound or something. And then if you go to a store where they are already selling it to you fully barbecued or roasted, they charge you $12.99 a pound. And, wow, it's almost three times as much. I mean, if I would go and roast it at home, it would only cost me an extra dollar or two. Why are they charging so? Listen, if a person wants to pay that, he knows what he's doing. Some people prefer that because they don't want the tircha, the time, the effort, and the expense, whatever. So, chomatim, if that's what you want to do, no problem. Everybody agrees. What happens if you have different? This case of loyover is referring to that he has different qualities of, for instance, grain. Or today you're a storekeeper and you have different qualities of the apples or oranges or whatever. So what you're doing is, when you're going to sell it on the stand, you're going to put the nicer ones and the better ones on the top, and the schwacher ones on the bottom. Why? Because obviously you want to entice the customer to go and buy it. Don't go and choose among your schoyer to put the better ones on top and the worse ones underneath, because that's going to design that's going to be stas. What you just do is just pour out all the fruits onto your stand, your table, wherever, and if you have some good ones on the top and some bad ones on the top, whatever, person will go through the fruit and buy whatever he wants. Ein mafarchasin liyasa odom liyasa behemo v'loyasa kelim. The word mafarchasin over here has different meanings when you're talking about an odom behemo v'kelim. Basically, what you're doing is you're improving the product in a way that will entice people to go and buy the product, And this is considered all to be a deceptive practice. When we're saying Adam, how can you go and sell an Adam? Says Rashi, we're talking about selling an Eved Kanani. So don't try to improve the Eved Kanani. The Gemara will give an example, an Eved Kanani who's already 85 years old, who has white hair on his head and a white beard. You go and dye it, so he looks like he's only 50 years old. Ah, so people will be willing to go and buy a 50-year-old Eved, and not an 85-year-old Eved. So this is a false advertising practice by making him look nicer, when really, in truth, this is an old guy. Well, Mitchum, we'll talk about this morning. Okay, we go back to the first case. The first case is the Chenveni should not entice the Tinoikis by giving out free kernels of wheat or free egoism nuts to the Tinoikis, Margilin Lovai. And the Chom Matir, Freitim Matmai, the Rabban. The Omalei, the Rabban say, Ano Maflig Nem Goizim Yar Pelig Shinsky. You have two storekeepers who are competing with one another. The first one is giving out nuts. The second one says, hey, that's a deceptive practice. So the first one says, mister, who's stopping you? You can also go and distribute to the children a treat. I'm giving out angoizi, that's a Russian egoiz, which means nuts. You give out shiski. Rashi says in the Bible, shiski means prunes. Give out free prunes. Or today, give a free lollipop. Or give a free bag of potato chips. You know? It's all fair. I'm giving it out free. You can give out free too. No problem. For you, this is a Shabbat. My time in the Rabbana, why is the Zohar Toiv? Mishum de kamavach latara, fakert. By doing that, that will hopefully reduce the market rate, the market price, and all the consumers will benefit. So it's good to have competition among storekeepers in reducing the price, because that will be good for the consumers. V'lo yovres agrees in the Rabbi Shol, v'chachom matir. Man chachom hu, the chachom that say, yes, you can take off the grease and charge more for it, to take off the shells and the peels and charge more. This is the same Reb Acha we had on the Amud Aleph, where Reb Acha says, don't look upon the consumer as a fool. The consumer knows what he's doing. So on the Amud Aleph we said, you're allowed to go and mix in one wine with another wine. Bedover Hanitin, a store that allows the customer to go and taste from the wine. You mix the wines together, he'll decide on his own. If it tastes kishmak, he'll buy you the wine. If he's not happy with it, he'll take from another barrel. He'll go across the street to another winery. So there's no problem. Same thing over here. When you're talking about removing the shells or the peels from the greasen, from the beans, and you're saying to yourself, oh, the person will be overcharged. Says Rashi, everybody, Bedover Hanira, you see clearly that the Chanut, the Chenveni, has removed the shells and the peels and he's charging more. Now you'll decide on your own. Do you want to pay more because he's already given you a final product, you don't have to shell it yourself? Or are you not willing to pay so much? No? If you look at the top Rashi, Matib Devra Nira, middle of the line. Haliyachal of the Kiach Liroi Salahavit, he can see with his own eyes. He understands. Madamehapsoidis Hanivra Me Elu, Shiyeshna Vacherim. He sees that the other pile has on it the shells and the peels. Yes, it's cheaper, it's maskim. This one is more expensive. But Toivlo the Havas Bedameim Shalelu Yasser Alkain, he's willing to overpay. I just don't want to be bothered. Now for Pesach, there are a lot of people that are makpid. They don't go and buy crushed nuts. They go and buy the original walnuts or the original almonds, whatever, and they go and crush it themselves. If you want to have the benefit, if you trust the hashkacha and you're happy with the hashkacha, and you want to go and buy the crushed nuts, it costs more. A pound of walnuts, $2 a pound, and the crushed walnuts, which is only half a pound, but it has the equivalent of the pound of walnuts, whatever, it costs you $2, $3, $4. He's willing to pay more, so he shouldn't have to mitzvah in grinding and crushing the nuts himself. So, dovanir, it's no problem. Turn around. So the Gemara now gives examples of this pirchus. Pirchus of it means to improve the cosmetics, the appearance, the outside, the outward appearance of these products. So the mushla im sharbatin is a behema. The Gemara will explain what that means in a moment. Ve'noifchem bekirbayim. Ve'noifchem means, explains Rashi, to go and cause the kirbayim, the intestines or the innards of the animal, to look wider and nicer and better. So the word noifchem means to blow them up. So presumably that would mean to go and blow some air in it. If you've ever been to a shlachtois, when they are boidik the reya is the lungs, to see whether or not there's a sircha, they have a special blower, a blowing machine to go and blow up the lungs so they should be nice and plump and nice and good. There it's not for purposes of selling, for purposes to see if there's a sircha, to see if there's a leak. So we'll hear a hissing sound, or they'll see whether the lung collapses. So they'll know whether there's a hole in the lungs, or they'll be able to see whether there's a sircha. Sircha means a plug in the hole. But the point over here is, here too they blow up the Bnei Mayayim either with such a blower, or some other way that they make it look nicer and wider and bigger and gishmak. Don't do that, because it's a false practice. You think you're getting out a big, big pipik, a big, big stomach from the animal. Ah, it's a regular small fry, but he blows it up to make it look like it's big. Then it's showing us a busa beaten b'mayim. Don't go and take basar and soak it in water. What means don't soak it in water? Says Rashi in the fourth line, shemalbin v'hakochosh nirashamin. By soaking in water, after that looks gishmak, it looks nice and fat. Don't do that, it's false practices. This reminds me of a story many, many years ago. On the west side, we had Rav Ornstein, Zecher Mevrach. Rav Ornstein was the Rav of the Rinnike Shtibel for maybe 30 or 40 years, maybe longer. Anyway, so among one of his duties was, he was a mashgiach on behalf of, at that time it was called, I think, the Manhattan Kashrus, or West Side Kashrus. It was some sort of Kashrus organization which is now defunct, but he was one of the mashgichim. So as part of his job, besides going to the places where the this Kashrus organization gave their a stamp of approval, he would go and visit other stores as well. And years ago on the west side, we had maybe 20 Basser Kosher stores. And the Basser Kosher stores were Shmachem Isis, as they say in Yiddish. They were not that reliable. Anyway, so he went into one of the Basser Kosher stores on Broadway between 86th and 87th Street. And he asked the butcher, whoever's in charge, "Oh, I see you're selling all this meat. Where did you get it from? Which lachto is this, that, the other thing?" And then he asked him, "By the way, do you salt your meat before you sell it so that the customer doesn't have to worry about salting it to get out the blood?" So the butcher said to him, "Salt the meat? Why would I salt the meat?" He says, "You know, to drain the blood." He says, "Rabbi, I don't want to drain the blood. I specially make it that this my meat should look as red and as bloody as possible to be able to attract customers." They'll say, "Oh, it must be fresh meat. Look, it's swimming in blood. I wouldn't want to remove the blood." So that butcher had no idea that there was an inyan of malicha to go and remove the blood before you cook it, unfortunately. Anyway, but getting back to our Gemara, so our Gemara is telling us that they used to go, some people would go and soak the meat to make it look more gishmak. Don't do that because it's false practices. So let's go back to Ein Mesharvetin Zbahim. What it means, my Ein Mesharvetin, Hocher Tegimu Mayo de Chizra. The Gemara is going to give us three different explanations. All three of them come out the same. And that the word Sharvet, as you know, is a Sharvet Hazov, right? We have that in the Megillah, which means Ashteken. Ashteken means like a stick. And what the practice was to cause the hair of the animal to stand up straight and as hard, like a stiff, like a stick, and this made the animal look much more plump and much bigger because you had the hair sticking up. So how did they accomplish that? So Hochatir Gemu, here they said Mayi de Chizra. What's Mayi de Chizra? So Rashi says on the fourth line, Mashkin Oisa Mei Subin. They would go and give to drink to the animal water with bran. Bran, as you know, is a byproduct of Tvua. Years ago, Subin was considered to be a very inferior product. The Gemara says, Yoshev l'rabbe shav kesef ki kesef afilu Subin. You can go and a person who's a mazik and he doesn't have money, he can even go and give him Subin, bran, because even if you can't sell it here, there's a market somewhere else for it. Today, bran is considered to be very nutritious, and you have many cereals which say on it that it's 10% bran or whatever. Anyway, so you have this watered bran, they would feed it to the cows, to the animals, that would cause the Bnei Me'ayim to expand, the Sarin Niskuf, and it would cause the hair on the outside of the animal to be stiff and to stand up. Oh, so therefore the animal looks plumper and bigger. You're not going to do that. That's one pshat. Ziri Omar Rav Kahana, maskafta. A much easier pshat, maskafta, says Rashi, means kirtzef. Kirtzef means to go and take a comb or a brush to go and brush up. In English there's a fancy term, I think it's to tease or to teasel the hair of the animal, so it should look fluffy and stand up and not be flat on the outside of the animal. So that's sharvet. Shmuel says, shora lemir matumi. No, that's a new shtickle. Anyway, so those are the different pshatim in the sharvetin. Don't make the animal look plumper and healthier and nicer by causing the hair to stand on its head. Shmuel shor lemir matumi lesarbala. Shmuel was matir to add, sarbala is a coat. Tumi means, Rashi says, fringes. Rashi uses a French term, fringes. In this case, silk fringes on the bottom of the coat to make it nicer, to make it look more pretty. Probably something similar to when we buy talasim today, the talasim come with such fringes on the bottom of the talus. There's no purpose in those fringes. We're not talking about, of course, the tzitzis. We're talking about from one tzitzis to the other, you have these fringes sticking out, it makes it look pretty, it makes it look nice. So Shmuel was matir to do that. Rav Yehuda shor l'kiskusi karmi. He was matir l'kiskusi karmi. Rashi says that means to take bigodim hametziorim, those are, karmi means nice colored garments, and to go and put in starch to stiffen them so it feels like a thicker bigot. He was matred, no problem. Rabbi Sharla Medik Tzuradi. If you remember, we had Tzuradi already back in Daf Nun Aleph. There's more used the expression over there, Tzarduye. What was that all about over there? There it had to do with, back on Nun Aleph Amid Aleph, and on Nun Aleph Amid Beis. More was talking about there too, about Oino'o, that when Rav Chizda would go and sell Sidraisa, Sidraisa actually said over there was big the canvas Oindim Limacher, that were for sale. So the more talked there about the word Sidruye or Sidraisa, that is referring to canvas begotten. What were you allowed to go and do with canvas begotten? You're allowed to go and buy them, say, from Lekeach Min HaTager, from Lekeach Min HaBalabayis. There would not be a din of Oinah. Anyway, it was a din of Oinah talking about canvas begotten. Here too, the Gemara is talking about Sidruya is a canvas beged. So Shora, what was he matir? The word lemedik means to go and beat it with your hands or with a stick, whatever, to make it thinner. And presumably that was more attractive when you're talking about a canvas beged. Canvas, I guess by definition, is perhaps stiffer and thicker. So if you wanted to make it softer and thinner, they would go and bang it a few times. He said, that's okay. Rav Sholit Slumegiri. If you want to sell arrows, a regular arrow, as you know, is a piece of wood that has at the end of it, you know, the thing that goes into the target. So he allowed for Tzlume to go and color it and make it white and green and blue and different colors to make it more attractive for a purchaser. Rav Papa Bar Shmuel showed that Tzlume Dikuli, if you're selling a basket, like a wicker basket, he allowed you to go and paint it and make it green and blue and yellow, no problem. Vegim of Anantanam, didn't we say in the Mishnah, you're not allowed to do these things? And you're being mefarchim to Kalim, you're painting them and you're making them nicer and you're beating them to make it thinner and that. So Gemara Lekashi b'chavdi habatiki. Depends on, you were talking about brand new or you're talking about old. If you're selling a brand new basket, for instance, you're allowed to go and color it. In fact, a lot of people will prefer buying a basket that is blue or red instead of just buying black or white. You know, it's more colorful and people will be willing to pay more. That's not a problem. The customer has a right to go and buy things which are pretty and nice. No, that's no problem. The problem in our Mishnah is Atiki Altis Choyre. You have an old wicker basket. You want to make it look pretty. It's already worn out. It's already 20 years old. You paint it green and blue. Oh, people think it's brand new. That's a deceptive practice. So we spoke both about the behema of causing the hair to stick out on its head, and we spoke about the kelim to go and paint them different colors. What's pirchas the other mayi? Kihodahu av the sabda. There was an old Evi Kanani, the ozal that went and save the racial the dikne. He took his white hair and his white beard, and he dyed it black, so you should look like a young guy. Also, Kami, the Ravi comes in front of the Rava. Omalei Zimlan, he said to Rava, please bind me as your Eved Kanani. Omalei Sarava said, thank you very much for the offer, but there's a Mishnah Perkei Yubis, you aniyim b'nei beisecha. You should rather go and give panosa to Yidin, to aniyim who are poor, that they should be mishamish me, so I'm going to hire, instead of an Eved Kanani, buying an Eved Kanani, I'm going to hire a Nebuch Ayid that Nebuch needs panosa, and he'll be my shamish, the aniyim b'nei beisecha. Okay, so the Eved walked away, us become the Papa Bashmul, and he asked him, buy me, and the Papa Bashmul Zabni bought him. Yoim Echad, one day, the Papa Bashmul asked the Eved, Omli Ashkayim Maya, please do me a favor, bring me a drink of water. And the Eved, Shimon, an old man, we're talking about this person who was old and he died, he's here. Ozel Chivr the Rei Sheik Ulidikne, he now went to the sink, and he removed all of the dye, and now he looks like his age. On Malay, so now the Eved said to the Papa Bashmul, Chazi, look, there are no kosher miyavuch. Not only older than you, I'm older than your father. I could be your father. I'm older than him. Kari Anafshe, so the Papa Bashmul realized that he made a mistake in buying this Alta Eved. And he said, Tzadik, Mitzor and Echlat. Tzadik is referring to Rava. He's the Tzadik. Mitzor and Echlat, he was freed from a potential tzara of being stuck with the Alta Eved. The Yovi Acher Tachtev, and I unfortunately was the replacement for the Tzadik that I fell in and I bought this Alta Eved. I should have ultim Makayim Yaniyim B'nei Beisach. Han L'chazov. We start now Ezeu Neshech, a Geshmak Perek about Hilchois Ribis. Perek Hazov focus on Oino'o, and Perek Ezeu Neshech focuses on interest. Ezeu Neshech v'Ezeu Tarbis. What's the difference between Neshech and Tarbis? We'll see in the Gemara shortly that there are psukim that use both terms, Neshech and Tarbis, or Marbis. The question is there any difference between the two? So the Gemara is going to tell us that Min HaTorah there's no difference. In fact, anybody that either lends, or even a person who borrows money on interest, and doesn't have to be money. Well, the same thing applies to if you are borrowing food items. And in fact, the Pasuk says, Kol Dav Rashi Yishach, you borrow from someone a pencil, and you pay back two pencils. That is considered to be ribis. All of these things are ribis. So Min HaTorah, Neshech and Tarbis are synonymous terms. They're exactly the same. Neshech and Tarbis is the same thing. What our mission is going to tell us is, however, there is something known as ribis terabonim. Ribis terabonim is not in the form of a loan, it's in the form of derech mekach u'memker. You'll see in the Gemara momentarily. Zokti Mishnah, Ezeu Neshech v'Ezeu Tarbis. Ezeu Neshech, what is Neshech? Interest Min HaTorah. Very simple. Amal v'sela behei dinrim. We all know a seller has four dinrim, and I lend someone a seller, which is four dinrim, and I tell him, pay me back in a year, but don't pay me back four dinrim, pay me back five dinrim. Oh, you're over the din of neshech and tarbis minatoyer, over two isurim. And by the way, the Mishnah daf ayin hay, as well as the Gemara tomorrow, is going to tell us that the din of the isurim is not only on the lender, but even the borrower is over. And not only that, the Mishnah is going to tell us even the edim that sign the document. When Mandiyama holds in the soifa that writes the document, the soifa that wrote out the document that he was borrowing four and he has to pay back five, all are over in the din of Neshech and Tarbis. And it's not only by money. Same thing applies to Sasayim Chitim Mishalash. I'm going to borrow from you now two so'a of Chitim, and I'm going to pay you back three so'a in a month from now, in a year from now. Osir Mitneshu Noishech, it's Neshech, and it's also Tarbis, it's Osir and Atoyra, both Isur. Now when our Mishnah said Ezeu Tarbis, we don't mean Tarbis to your Raisa that we already covered. Anything diaraisa, interest, is both an isser of neshech and marbis. Veizeu tarbis, what's the tarbis that our mission is referring to? A tarbis dirabonim. That's a marba peiris. Okay, so I'll give me an example. Lochechemenu chitim bediner zov, hakur. V'chein ashar. The person made up what we call a supply contract. Person went to a farmer and he says to the farmer, I have a store, I sell chitim the store. Will you supply me with chitim throughout the whole year? What is the market price today? Dinner zohav hakar. Dinner zohav, as we know, is 25 dinri kesef. We had that not too long ago. 25 dinri kesef, dinri zav. From now until next season, I want to buy from you, Achvayis, 1,000 bushels of wheat. I'm not going to take it all at one time. I'm going to take them 20 bushels a week, etc. So what's the din? I make up with you a dinri zav akar. V'chinashan, that was the established market price. Totally legitimate, totally fine. What happens if subsequently, 2 months later, there's now a shortage of chitim in the market and it's gone up from 25 dinri kesef to 30 dinri kesef? And now the person from the original supply contract says, tell me chitai, give me chitim, shem iroitzel amaychem. You know why I want the chitim? I need to sell them and buy wine. If you'd say, just tell me chitai, shem iroitzel amaychem, no problem. Even though the chitim has gone up in price, that was the original contract. That up to twice, whatever they agreed, the 5,000 bushels of wheat throughout the year, I'm going to charge you 25 dinrei kesef. Even though now it's 30 dinrei kesef, that's permissible, says Rashi. That's not a problem whatsoever, because they made up at the time of the original shar. And Rashi says, when the shar comes out, that means one can buy chitim here, there, and everywhere. In other words, many people have the chitim, and that's why there's already an established market price. So you could have taken full delivery already at that time. But the moich is doing you a favor and says, I'll hold on to the chitim for another 6 months. I'll give it to you in small installments as you need it. So there's no problem with that. So even though they went up in price, that would not be a case of ribis. Where's the case of ribis, says the Mishnah? If he tells them, I want the chitim now, not that I need the chitim, but I want to sell the chitim because I need cash. And I'm going to take the cash, and I'm going to go and buy some wine. So Omaloi, so the Moichi says to him, you know what? I'm now changing the price of the chitim now to shloishim, meaning that what I'm going to sell you has the benefit of the higher price. And instead I'm going to give you wine. In other words, the chitim supplier was also a wholesaler in wine. So he said to him, I'm going to give you wine, and I'm going to give you the benefit of the lower price. Because normally I would go and give you now 10 bushels of chitim at the price of 25, because that's what we agreed. I'm going to deem it as if you paid me 30, and therefore I owe you now $30 worth, 30 sloim worth, of 30 dinrim worth of chitim. Instead of giving you chitim, you tell me you need wine, I'm going to give you wine at that higher price, so therefore you're going to benefit from the difference between the 25 and the 30. The ayin engloi, but he doesn't even have the wine. If he had the wine, you could go and give him the wine, because after all, it's a fair barter, fair exchange. For your chitim, I'm giving you yayin, no problem. But he didn't even have the wine. If he didn't have the wine, then you see the aleph of the Bach says, and it's osur, because this now becomes a tarbis through Mekach u'Memkar. There was no loan over here. It was just normal, you know, business relationships back and forth. He had a supply contract to go and buy chitim, and now he's doing a barter of chitim for yayin. That last part, the chitim for yayin, is toitish. The reason is because he said, I'm going to mala the value of the chitim as if it was shloishim, and the wine taka kosh shloishim, so you're getting a bit of a discount on the wine. Because the chitim that he received, he paid for that only 25. The wine is worth 30. He said, but I'm going to value your chitim as if it's 30, because that's the new market price of 30. And he didn't have the wine. If he had the wine, that would also be okay. Since he didn't have the wine, the Gemara will explain it in more detail in Yetz Hashem. Okay, starting the Gemara. Remember, we explained that when it says in the Mishnah, Ezeo Tarbis, we're now going away from the Araisa, we're talking about the Ribis Rabbanan of Mecca Chomemka. Mechlal, the Araisa, the Neshef, a Tarbis Chonemilzi. So therefore, it would appear that when the Torah talks about Neshef, a Tarbis, they're one and the same. Now, where do we have Neshef, a Tarbis in the Torah? If you have the Torah Ora Sholem, you'll see Ois Beis, Es kasbucha leisitin loy b'neshech, uvimarbis leisitin ochlecha. So the Torah talks about neshech and about tarbis. Now neshech, it says by es kasbucha, kesef don't give b'neshech. Uvimarbis leisitin ochlecha. By oichel, there's an issa of tarbis. So on the surface, it looks like two separate issurim. There's a neshech oichel issur, and there's a tarbis oichel iser, one by kesef or one by oichel. Our Gemara is telling us by the fact that the Mishnah, when it goes to Ezeu Tarvis, it goes into Mekachum Memker, sounds like that the inyan of Neshech Diaraisa is both Neshech and Tarbis, both by Kesef and by Oichel. Because you see, the examples that the Mishnah gave Ezeu Neshech was both Dalet Dinrim for Hadrinrim, that's Mahi, and it's the same Chita Mishalish, that's Oichel. So you see that Lechoyra, Michlal Diaraisa, Neshech, Vitarbis, Chodem Milzi, it's all one and the same. V'akroi Ksivi. But the Pasuk doesn't say that. The Pasuk says Neshech Kesef. As Kasbucha, Lisitoni Beneshech. By Oichel, Sevarib is Oichel. So it's two different things. Faitimara, Tizba, let me ask you. Take a Neshech Bele Tarvis. The Tarvis Bele Neshech. Do you have Taki case of a Neshech without Tarvis and Tarvis? Aren't they one and the same? Now, the definition of the word Neshech means to bite into the other person. Anytime you go and you charge interest, you're taking a bite out of the guy. Because not only does he have to return the original Karen, but he has to be marbe, he has to go and add. So you're being noishich, you are cutting away, you're biting away from him the additional interest. Tarvis means that the malv is getting a reboy, he's getting marbe, he's getting more. So is there such a thing that you can go and bite out from the loive and not get an increase for the malve? Is there something that you get an increase for the malve without taking a bite of the loive? Aren't they one the same? So Timon, yo, Neshe B'lei Tarvis Echidam. Yes, you could have Neshe B'lei Tarvis. How? The person lent 100. And he says, in a year from now, you have to pay me 120. Rashi says, L'mashal Prutais. 100 Prutais for 120 Prutais. No. So that certainly sounds like you're taking ribbis, right? So now, let's analyze. Meikora Kaimi Meya Bedanka. Initially, one danka, which is one ma'a, held 100 prutais. This is a difficult gemara to understand because a ma'a has in it altogether 32 prutais. How do you have 32 prutais? Because a danka and a ma'a is the same thing. And every ma'a or every danka has it in two punjoinim, every punjin has it in two isra. 2 times 2 is 4. Every isra has in it 8 prutois, echem mishmoyne be isri talki, so 4 times 8 is 32. So the Gemara is talking about 100 and 120, it's difficult to conjure up in your mind. So the Taptoises attack a little bit upset about that. You see the Taptoises say, Neshech, mei bedanka, pirushashi, kuf prutois, bimoa, shushtus dinner, the kosher, hey chuzla prutus kolkach, it's impossible that the prutus went so down. To Bishar Beinoni, normally the Shar is Ein Kiyim Shnai Mishloishim Emor 32. Mor Shnei Punyim Punyim Shnei Isrim Isrus Ches Brutas Ani 32. So how do you get to this 100? So therefore, actually, Toises has a slightly different shot. But bottom line is that you're getting 100 coins, 100 prutois, says Rashi, for one danka. That was initially. So therefore, when he borrowed from him 100, he was really borrowing from him the larger danka. That's the Mor. Lipsoif, a year later, guess what? Kaimi meva esr medanka. The prices of the conversion of monies have changed. You no longer get 100 for a danka, now you get 120 for a danka. Ooh. Of course, today you don't find it so much in the currency of the same country. But if you're, for instance, in Eretz Yisrael, and you're converting from dollars to shkolim, or shkolim to dollars, as you know, the prices fluctuate all the time. So therefore, at the beginning of the year, for one danka, you get 100 prutais. A year later, for one danka, you get 120 prutais. Zokimara, neshech ikka, l'chor yam neshech, dekon noch islay, dekoshoka minay midi deloy yohiv. Since you're taking away 120 instead of 100, you have neshech, you're biting away from him that extra 20. Tarvis leka. However, there's no tarvis. The malv is not gaining an additional penny to lesli ravcha. The danka oisvi, the danka kashaka mina. If you look from the malvis perspective, from the loivis perspective, he borrowed 100. He has to pay 120. Oh, that's neshech, a bite. But in terms of the malv is a big deal. I lent him a danka. I got back a danka. I didn't get any additional tarvis. So that would be a neshech below tarvis. So Timara, but that's not true. Because soif, if you analyze the transaction carefully, you'll see asinishtemes. Because ibasami kar azlis, if you just go at the beginning of the year, in other words, at the time of the original loan, harineshav harbitarvis. Both, he's taking a bite out of the other guy. Instead of just getting 100, he's asking for 120. Varitarvis, since at that time, a danka was worth 100, at the end of the year, had the price not fluctuated, again, basmei karazus. See, he's going and taking back from him a danka plus 20 extra brutais. So you have both neshech and taris. E basi b'soif azus. If you look at the end, in other words, a year from now, loy neshech ikav loy tarbis ikav. There's neither neshech nor tarbis. Why is there not neshech nor tarbis? Because as far as the borrower is concerned, it's true he's paying back 120, but he borrowed a danka and he's giving back a danka. So therefore, he has already lost nothing. And the Malv is not gaining anything. He lent him a more, he lent him a dunker, he's getting back a dunker. So there's no either. So there is no such case, says the Gemara, of Neshech Beloy Tarbis. Vesu, Tarbis Beloy Neshech, Echidami, how can you have Tarbis Beloy Neshech? It always a mayor, the mayor, that he lent him 100. Pay me back 100. I'm an Erev Chiyid, I'm not going to charge you interest. I lend you 100, pay me back 100 a year from now. Mayor Korakayim, me mayor Bedanka. At this point, you can go and get 100 prutas for one danka, for one more. Vipsoif, and a year later, meya b'chumsha. The prutas have gone up in value, and instead of only of getting 100 for a danka, it's already 100 for a chumsha. What does that mean? A danka is a sixth. Remember, Tosis told us before, a danka is a shtus, it's a mo'a is a sixth of a dinner. So until now, you can get 100 prutas for one danka, for one sixth, which means for a full dinner, that would be six times as much, you would get 600 prutais in the in your dinner. A dinner would be 600 prutais. But soif mei b'chumsha, and now he's telling us is that the price of the prutais has gone up, that for one danka, you can only get 500 prutais. What do you mean? Because the prutas have gone up in value. Each pruta is now worth more than it was. Till now you can go and get 600 for one danka. Now you can get a 500. The reason for that is because the danka is not the danka. Because the pruta is now more expensive, and therefore you're getting only 500 and not 600. So, what are you going to tell me? That's also a case of tarbis b'loy neshech. Why is it tarbis b'loy neshech? As far as the owner is concerned, the borrower is concerned, it's not the borrower, the lender is concerned, he's getting more. How is he getting more? Because he originally said, I'm going to get a mei b'danka. Now he's gotten more valuable prutois that are 100 b'chumsha. So he's getting more. However, vis-a-vis the borrower, there's no neshech. Because he borrowed 100 and he's getting back 100. Same thing. So Ibazoi, you can tell me that's tarbis b'lei neshech. Says him, no, the same type of analysis. Since they made up 100 for 100, he borrowed 100, he gave back 100. There was no neshech, I didn't bite from him, and I didn't get any benefit. The same 100. If you're going to go at the end, a year from now, when the prutas are more expensive, hari neshech bari tarbis. So now I am taking a bite out of the guy, because I'm telling him, I want from you 100. He's giving him more expensive prutas. When he went to the bank to take his danka, to change it into multiple prutas, he thought he would get back 600, and he'd only have to pay 100 to the lender. Guess what? He only got 500. Oy, oy, oy. He's only going to be left over with 400. So he has to give him more expensive prutas. So if you go Buster Seif Aslis, it's neshech. He's taking a bite out of it. Vari tarbis. And of course the lender has benefited, because now he's getting back 100 more expensive prutas instead of the cheap prutas. So therefore says Yimai Elo Marova, Iyata Moitel Neshech Lei Tarbis Lei Tarbis Lei Neshech. They're identical. They're synonymous. They're the same. For Echilkan Akosif. You know why the Torah uses the expression Tarbis Neshech Kesem Neshech Oichel Marbis Lei Sitan Achlecha Laver Ola Bishnei Laven, to tell you that any time that you are a lender or you are a borrower, you're not only over on, and if you charge interest or you receive interest, it's not only one lav, they're two lavim. One lav is called a neshech lav, one lav is called a marbis or tarbis lav, but they're both the same. The third is just being marbis lavim, don't lend or borrow with interest. Stop over here, Rabbi Yisai. Have a good yontif, all the very, very